is about time the big people got their flowers. Everybody loving on the tiny guy, the guy that can spin, the guy that can run, the guy that can shoot the ball from very far away and put it into the basket from 30 feet. That's all well and good, but give me some beef. Give me some size, some strength. Give me some love for the dude willing to do the dirty work that makes the Memphis Grizzlies tick. That's exactly what we're going to do on this episode of Locked On Grizzlies. Join me, please, in locking in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Grizzlies, your team every day here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you so much for making us a part of your Memphis Grizzlies experience. We are free and available wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube. Rate, review, subscribe, give us feedback in the comments section. All is appreciated. And today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com, promo code LOCKEDON. I'm Joe Mullinax, back with you after a few days off here, and I'm excited not to be flying solo because I missed DeMichael terribly, DeMichael Cole, who, of course, is the wonderful, handsome, brilliant mind that is my co-host. He is the Grizzlies beat writer for the commercial appeal. And since he's got a back-to-back between the game that the Grizzlies played against the Wizards on Sunday night, Celtics on Monday night, we figured this would be the best night for me to ride alone, so to speak. He'll be flying solo after the Celtics game, and then we'll be together the rest of the week. So I miss DeMichael when we're not together. Don't get me wrong, but it's a great opportunity because, no offense to DeMichael, he's not a large person, right? And compared to NBA athletes, nor am I. You know, I'm 6'2", about 280 pounds. I was a college football player. So I'm a larger dude, but I am not as big as, you know, 7-footers. And I'm certainly not as athletic. I would never compare myself in that way. The way I am comparing myself is in terms of just an appreciation for sheer mass. You know, the ability to just be a large human being, that holds tremendous value. And I am thrilled to see that across the games of this past weekend for the Memphis Grizzlies, two major victories for them, a blowout win over the Charlotte Hornets, where it was rarely in question, and then a tighter contest where the Memphis Grizzlies let things slip a little bit and had to regather there in the final moments to pull out a win. Two good wins for a team that needed them, still without Jaren Jackson Jr. and without Zaire Williams. The schedule's about to get harder, so they need as many victories now as they can rack up. Ja Morant gets credit. Desmond Bane gets credit. Up and down the roster, I feel like there's one guy, a large human, who should get more love than he does. So this first segment of Locked On Grizzlies is an ode to Steven Adams and the role that he plays on this roster for this team, regardless of whether or not Jaren Jackson Jr. is there. But his importance really shone through in these two games, Friday and Sunday night, entering in to the Monday night in the NBA before Election Day, where literally all 30 teams are in action. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch play out. But before we got there, we had two games that Steven Adams showed his value. Against the Charlotte Hornets, it was a little bit easier to see. You could just look it up in the box score. 19 rebounds secured by Steven Adams. And again, this was a blowout win. No Grizzlies player played more, no starter, I should say, than 25 minutes. David Roddy played 28 minutes, but he's not a starter. No Grizzlies starter played more than 25 minutes. Ja Morant logged 25 in the 130-99 victory. But in 22 minutes of play, Steven Adams grabbed 19 rebounds. 19. The Memphis Grizzlies as a team grabbed 60 rebounds. The Charlotte Hornets as a team grabbed 41 rebounds. So do the math. In 22 minutes of play, Steven Adams grabbed almost the same or almost half the amount of rebounds that the entire Charlotte Hornets team had. And he did grab roughly a third of the rebounds that his own team had in less than his normal amount of playing time. It's astounding. It is a credit, not just to his size, because again, Steven Adams excels at being a large human. You watch him screen. It creates so much space for John Morant, Desmond Bane off the dribble, and others. That holds major value in terms of the offensive scheme. But what else holds value is just his ability to dominate the glass, his timing, his positioning. He has some Zach Randolph to him in that way. Not the same as Zebo, because obviously Adams has the given gift of size in terms of physical length and height that Zach didn't necessarily have. But he has that innate ability on a smaller scale to put himself where he believes the ball is going to be and go and get it. You know, he has jokingly said in press availabilities that when you're as big as him, you should get rebounds. And that's fair to an extent, but he is truly elite in the NBA. He was one of the very best, if not the best, offensive rebounders in the entire association last year. He's continuing that trend this season. 11 of those 19 rebounds against the Charlotte Hornets were of the offensive variety. So this guy is just cleaning up the glass for a team that's not their strong suit. Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a strong rebounder. You can make an argument that the second best rebounder on the team behind Adams is John Conchar, who is elite at rebounding as a wing. But that is not usually the way to have success as a rebounding team. Memphis has always kind of done it, at least in the last year or so, as a buy within each other, you know, a team effort, so to speak, when it comes to cleaning the glass. But Steven Adams against the Charlotte Hornets, and it was a bad night for Charlotte. They shot really poorly. But Adams made them pay, limited their opportunities, and then also got extra shots for the Grizzlies, which is so valuable. It's not like Memphis is elite in that particular game. They shot really well. But Memphis has their off nights as well, which we'll talk about more here in a moment. And when that happens, those offensive rebounds, those extra positions mean so much. So against Charlotte, Adams plays a major role. And then against the Washington Wizards, he does so. He is a strong rebounder in the Wizards contest as well. He grabs 10 in this game. Santi Aldama also grabbed 10. John Morant grabbed 9, almost had a double-double in that way. But Adams' ability really are important to the team in particular. When he got injured at the top of the third quarter, he goes down. Memphis is up 15. Memphis has a 15-point lead at that point. And from that moment forward, the Wizards go on a run. And the main reason that the Wizards go on a run is there is no other 7-footer. There is no other large, big, you know, the backup is Brandon Clark, who's about 6'8". Xavier Tillman's about 6'8", 6'9". The size goes away, and Washington finds themselves in a position to take advantage, and they go and attack the basket, and they have success attacking the basket, and they pressure the ball, and they force turnovers, and they get extra possessions, and they just find extra room to operate because there is no massive human being dominating the lane the way that there had been throughout the game prior to that moment. Steven Adams, tough son of a gun, returns to the game about midway through the fourth quarter. And miraculously, things shift. The Wizards fall in love with the three. They don't hit a single three in the entire fourth quarter, but they took 9 of them. They were extremely efficient in and around the paint until Adams returned, and then they decided to forego those opportunities and start chucking threes. That gave Memphis the window that they needed to hold and maintain that lead that they built in an explosive second quarter, a 33-18 second frame that gave the Grizzlies a lead. But Washington won 3 of the 4 quarters in this contest against the Wizards. It was the second that gave them the lead that Washington was not able to overcome. And it was the efforts of Steven Adams defensively, his presence in the paint, his ability to be large and in charge and not give things easily, that made all the difference in the world against the Wizards. His presence, his rebounding, his physicality. Again, in 22 minutes, 10 rebounds, he really showed tremendous effort and value there. So here's to you, Steven Adams. Cheers, mate. You have done something truly important to this organization. You have given them the rebounding, the defense, the size, the screen setting, all of the things that Jonas Valanciunas provided years ago without the offensive usage. It's enabled Desmond Bane and Ja Morant and all these other younger players to take on more offensive responsibility, and we still get the importance of somebody that's just elite at being a big, strong dude to help maintain and enforce in and around the lane. So kudos to Steven Adams, a major important piece of this Memphis Grizzlies franchise. I was just so impressed watching him over these last couple of games, and I thought he deserved his flowers in terms of just how important he was to the Grizzlies getting that victory. I hope you took on Prize Picks the idea of more or less. If Steven Adams getting 15 rebounds was an option on Friday night, hopefully you took more on that particular entry. Prize Picks and Daily Fantasy is the most fun way out there to get involved and really enjoy basketball in a new way. You get to pick 2 to 5 players, and you decide if they score more or less, if they rebound more or less, if they put up assists more or less than their prize picks projection. You can win up to 10 times your money on any entry. There's no competing against other people. It's just you against the projections that are available on Prize Picks. Prize Picks offers projections on any sport that you can watch, from the NBA to the NFL, all the way to Eurobasket and cricket and literally everything in between. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that simple. Safe and fast withdrawals are possible. And currently, Prize Picks is operational in over 30 states as well as in Canada. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, Prize Picks will give you $100. If you deposit $50, Prize Picks will give you $50. Don't forget to enter promo code LOCKEDON at sign up for an instant match deposit-wise of up to $100. We come back here on Locked On Grizzlies. I'll review other ways Memphis swept the weekend, some good and some bad coming out of the Hornets and Wizards games. You're listening and watching Locked On Grizzlies. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Locked On Grizzlies. We are checking out 2 good wins for the Memphis Grizzlies. I don't want to, you know, rain on the parade of a Grizzlies team that went 7-3 in their first 10 games, as I predicted. Thank you very much. I just want to shout out me. We're talking about being happy of people that are large. I'm not as big as Steven Adams, but you know what is as big as Steven Adams on me? My head. I have a very large head. There's a very large brain in there, folks. And I told you, 7-3. I predicted it on Twitter. Check the receipts. They're there. Everybody yells at me when I'm wrong. How about some flowers for me when I'm right? Huh? I'm going to have to start sending flowers to myself. Everybody's so hard on me. 7-3 without Jaren Jackson Jr., without Zaire Williams at all. That's a massively successful first 10 games for these Grizzlies. All these wins matter. It was really good to see Dylan Brooks be active offensively in a positive way, not just in terms of making 6 of his 7 three-point shots, because that's not always going to happen, right? No offense to Dylan Brooks, and I know he knows who his haters are, and maybe he sees me as one of his haters, although I've always been a Dylan Brooks supporter going back to my time at Grizzly Bear Blues. I believe in Dylan Brooks. I just know what he is. He is a flawed player who is where he is as an NBA player because of his confidence in himself. You can't be mad at someone for being themselves, and that is what Dylan Brooks is. But all of us are capable of growth and change and development, and I do think we're seeing that in Dylan Brooks' game. The game against Charlotte was a great example of that. Facilitating offense, extra passes, making smart shot decisions that we haven't always seen Dylan make over the course of his time as a Grizzly. That was refreshing against the Charlotte Hornets. Didn't see that as much against the Wizards, 4-for-14, no made threes on 4 attempts. So that was more along the lines of the Dylan Brooks experience that we've come to know and love. But in both games, you saw good defensive energy. You saw him attacking on the perimeter, not allowing players to get into their offensive rhythm. And even though he didn't have his offensive game against Washington, a positive for Dylan against the Wizards, 30 minutes played, only 1 personal foul. So he was able to stay on the floor. He was able to make an impact defensively and not have his minutes or the rotation of the Grizzlies be thrown off by his absence. Another positive, speaking of rotations, I thought Taylor Jenkins had a strong couple of games. He's really finding his footing now that he realizes that, you know, Jaron will probably be out another couple of weeks. Zaire Williams certainly will be out another couple of weeks. It's taken him a few games to start the 2022-2023 campaign, but I think he's comfortable with who he likes, with who. He did a really fun lineup when he had Jake LaRavia playing the four, Brandon Clark playing the five. Again, defensively, which we'll talk more about here in a moment, there's some concerns there with Clark as that five, with someone like LaRavia as the four. But on the offensive end, you put that with a Tyus Jones, Desmond Bain, Dylan Brooks backcourt. There's a lot of offensive opportunity and viability and malleability, which I am all a big fan of. The idea of versatile offensive looks and making yourself less predictable is something that I've been calling for a long time, not just pick and roll and go and dish and dribble penetration. That's all well and good, but teams, especially once you get to the highest level in the NBA playoffs, they're going to take away your first options. What are your next moves? What are your next steps? Ja Morant's a superstar. He's extremely difficult to stop. But when he doesn't have it, like he didn't have it offensively, you could argue, in either of these games, that makes the two wins all the more impressive. Morant was 4-for-12 from the field against Charlotte. He was an abysmal in terms of efficiency. 9-for-27. You know, he had a stat line that would make Rudy Gay blush. 23 points on 27 shot attempts. But to Ja's credit, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. He finds ways to help the team win even when his shot isn't falling. The victories are all the more impressive because they didn't have that efficient Ja Morant shooting like they had the previous 7 or 8 games leading into this weekend slate. Desmond Bane is back. All the concern about Desmond Bane looks super silly in hindsight. Again, because of Dylan's, Steven Adams had a double-double, 13 points with those 19 rebounds against Charlotte on Friday night. So they didn't have to play a ton, but Bane shot 50% from the field against Charlotte. He was even better than that against the Wizards. Extremely efficient, not just from the field, but from beyond the arc. 50% for the weekend, essentially, from three. So that's really strong. Continued his assist, his offensive creation, his facilitation in that secondary playmaker role. Bane is back. You know, he's found his footing and he's done some really good things. Brandon Clark was massively important in his 21 minutes against the Wizards. The Wizards bench really dominated that game once Adams went out. Obviously, Clark could have been better as a true big in terms of rim defense, but it wasn't all on him. Xavier Tillman, for example, was a -8 in 4 minutes played. I would say that number, you know, the only other guy that was in that mix, David Roddy, was a -4 in 16 minutes played. So Xavier Tillman played 4 minutes and was a -8. That single game plus minus is a flawed way to measure players, but that really kind of shines through in terms of X's struggles. He probably shouldn't be in the rotation at this stage. When Adams went down, it made him playing that much more necessary. Clark did some good things, especially when they needed scoring from those reserves when the Wizards were getting hot in the game on Sunday night. I really continue to be impressed with Jake LaRavia. He showed some amazing three-point shooting against the Wizards. In limited sample size, he's kind of going the John Conchar route right now in terms of not getting as many three-point attempts as maybe as you'd like him to take, but he's taking advantage of them when they come his way. I like him as a four, especially depending on the matchup. There's real value in him being that stretch option, creating more space. Xavier Tillman should never play unless it's somebody like an Aldama or a LaRavia that can space the floor. We keep talking about Santi being a floor spacer. He didn't have the best weekend from beyond the arc, 2-for-9 across the Hornets and the Wizards games. We'd like to see more from Santi in terms of his three-point shooting. He's still outside of his ideal role. Can't stress that enough. He's only starting because Jaren Jackson Jr. is out. But Santi started the season strong. You'd like to see him get back to that a little bit. One last thought. I mentioned John Conchar a moment ago. His usage, his shot attempts are back down across the two games. He only took 4 threes. He made 2 of them, but he played 15 minutes against the Wizards. He played 21 minutes against the Hornets, only took 4 threes across all that time on the floor. John Conchar is a great three-point shooter. He's a great spacer. As the Grizzlies' schedule gets tougher without Zaire, without Jaren, they need Conchar, especially as a reserve. He's got to provide some scoring punch. It can't just be Brandon Clark. Tyus Jones, that's not a strength of his game to force that. Jones is much more of a natural, let it come to him kind of player. And that's not to say that Conchar isn't, of course. That's one of the knocks that I've had on Conchar being that type of guy from the beginning. But when he gets those looks, he has to prioritize taking advantage of them, getting them, and actually converting them. That's extremely important. He has to seek out his shot. He's one of the few on the team that can convert those threes. Thank you for making Locked On Grizzlies your first listen. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Sports Today podcast, the biggest stories of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back here on Locked On Grizzlies, I'll finish out with some thoughts about the Celtics game coming up on Monday night. Obviously, Boston coming into Memphis, NBA championship dreams, and the Grizzlies have some of their own. Could this be an NBA Finals prediction or a preview? We'll talk about that next here on Locked On Grizzlies. Welcome back to Locked On Grizzlies. I'm here, Joe Mullinax, your host for this episode, flying solo. DeMichael Cole will be flying solo, reviewing this Celtics game coming up on the next episode of Locked On Grizzlies. But on this one, let's preview it, of course. And I have been impressed watching Boston this season, knowing all the chaos with their head coach's issues, having real problems. You know, it could be a lot worse for the Memphis Grizzlies. I like to make fun of the idea of the vibes being immaculate, as Parker Fleming over at Grizzly Bear Blues, the guy who succeeded me, excuse me, as the site manager there at GBB. I like to give him a hard time for saying the vibes are immaculate. There's something to be said for good vibes, right? Boston seemed to have pretty poor vibes to start the season, but things have improved for the Celtics. They're looking like they still could be that kind of contender, and it cycles and circles around the two Jays, right? Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, those two guys have found a way to coexist, play together, both at different times, look like MVP candidates. And going into this game for the Memphis Grizzlies, there is something to be said for a little bit of concern about who's going to guard the other one, right? Dylan Brooks is going to take one of the two, and that's going to be one of the fascinating storylines. Which one does Dylan take? Does he take Tatum, who can play that 3-4 kind of option as a combo forward? Does he take on Jaylen Brown, who's more of a 2-3 combo perimeter player? The positionless basketball thing makes this interesting to see in terms of who defends who. I would like to see Dylan on Jason Tatum personally. Not because Jaylen Brown is worse than Jason Tatum, although I do think Tatum is a superior offensive weapon. I think Tatum has more frame, more size, and I think that he could body Santi Aldama using his quickness, obviously the skills in his basketball toolkit. All of that would just make life really difficult for Santi. I think Desmond Bane, while Jaylen Brown is a, I'm going to get burned for this, I love Desmond Bane to death, but I think Jaylen Brown's better than Desmond Bane, at least in terms of his physical frame, the size that he has. The ceiling might be higher than it is for Bane. Brown could be an all-star starter. Brown could be a dark horse MVP candidate. He's looked like it at times in this season. I'm not sure Bane can do those things. And maybe he can, but with John Morant there, just like Brown has Jason Tatum there, maybe it'll be more difficult. I digress. I think Bane could handle Brown better than Aldama could handle Tatum, if that makes sense. So I don't see Jason Tatum being defended by Bane. I think that that should be a matchup where Brooks takes on the Tatum assignment. You put Bane on Brown and you let the rest of it kind of shake out. Marcus Smart is having an excellent start to his season in terms of defensive pressure. That shouldn't really surprise us. All the numbers suggest that he makes life miserable for whoever he is guarding. And chances are, he's going to be on Ja Morant. So when you look at the Celtics numbers and this roster, they really have a strength right now in their starting lineup in particular, in terms of how aggressive they are, how they defend. It's been impressive to see how they have responded to the issues, Ime Udoka and all the drama that surrounded that. But the guys that have started the most this season, Derek White, Marcus Smart, obviously Brown and Tatum, Al Horford, that starting five, they have been sound and stout defensively. Jason Tatum is averaging over 30 points a game, but Jaylen Brown at 25 points per game. It's not like he's that far off in terms of what he's capable of. Tatum has the bigger frame. Tatum has more size to him, more ability in terms of movement. I would like to see Dillon take on that assignment. And then obviously Horford with Adams. Smart would be defended by Jaw. And then you would have the final one being Derek White. That would be interesting, right? Can Santi Aldama handle Derek White? Because Adam Tatum is technically the four. So are you worried about the three-point shooting of Derek White? 42% on the season so far. That makes things a little more interesting, right? You're going to have to pick and choose against the Celtics team that's relatively deep. They've shown some good things from their reserves as well. One of my personal favorites, I've always wanted him on the Memphis Grizzlies. It's never worked out. Malcolm Brogdon, third on the Celtics in scoring, almost 15 points a game and just 24 minutes played per game. He is electric in terms of his two-point scoring right now. Extremely efficient, 54.5% on two-point scoring, according to basketballreference.com. He is putting the ball in the bucket at a pretty high clip, and he's putting together a sixth man of the year kind of season. So it's going to be interesting to watch how Brogdon plays in this contest. Grant Williams is obviously a unique player, can defend. He's kind of like Brandon Clark without the athleticism, but he maybe has better defensive chops. He has a good understanding of physical movement, where his body needs to be. He really understands the angles of the game. The Celtics have some depth, and they have some talent, of course, and they have weathered the early storm of controversy, and it seems like that's all worked out. The Brooklyn Nets are like, hey, Boston, let's help you, right? We'll bring on your disgraced coach who did something not cool. Here at the Boston Celtics, we don't care about vibes. That's the message I'm getting. Vibes are out the window. Let's focus on winning. It may not help. We'll find out. I think Boston has weathered that storm, and Boston's in a really good place to continue to have some success and build upon their strong start. Again, they're 6-3 entering this recording of this podcast. They're in Memphis, obviously, their next game coming up tonight against the Grizzlies. I think how they find a way to take advantage of the Grizzlies' defense, which has not been sterling of late, right? These previous two games against the Hornets and the Wizards, things have improved, but the Celtics are a step up in competition. They are currently number one in the NBA in points per game. Offensive rating is tops as well in the entire NBA. Makes you a little more nervous in terms of, are they going to be able to withstand the offensive onslaught of the Boston Celtics? And they have Marcus Smart. And I think that you could make the same argument with Bane and with Ja. There's going to be offensive weapons on both ends of the floor, but Marcus Smart is the reigning defensive player of the year. Grant Williams, Al Horford, Derek White, all of these guys have shown the ability to defend at some point in their careers. They're strong in that way. Tatum is having a strong start to his season defensively. Jaylen Brown has a good frame and good length and can move laterally as well. The Celtics have not been as strong defensively as maybe you'd expect them to. Currently 23rd, and again, small sample size. It's hard to use defensive rating this early in the season. But they are 23rd out of 30 teams at 115 in their defensive rating per Basketball Reference. That's deceiving. I think that the Grizzlies are going to have to find ways to get more three-point opportunities for a Jake LaRavia, a John Conchar. The Celtics are going to prioritize taking away Jaw, forcing him into quick decisions, getting the ball out of his hands. We know Desmond Bane can make the Celtics pay for those choices, but can the other guys? This feels like a game where the Grizzlies are really going to miss having Zaire Williams, having Jaren Jackson Jr. Those two would allow for an Aldama to not even have to worry about who he's going to defend in the starting lineup. It would put them in a position to where they could have Zaire Williams be that 6'9 matcher of wing and perimeter size that the Celtics boast in various positions. It's going to be challenging for the Grizzlies in this one. Doesn't mean that they can't win it, but the Celtics probably should be favored. And because of that, it makes the wins over the Hornets and the Wizards all that much more important because they've locked up some wins. They've picked up some victories. And because of that, a game against the Celtics, the second night of a back-to-back, even though it's at home, no travel involved, still some challenges there for the Grizzlies to try to overcome. I am less than optimistic that the Grizzlies are going to knock off the Celtics. But again, it's at home. You can never bet against John Morant in terms of him having a strong performance. And he's going to have something to prove. He's going to think that he does, at least, after two less efficient outings. I think it'll be close, Boston has every reason to pull away in this one and pick up the win, but it's hard to count out the Grizzlies, especially when the lights are on bright, as they will be against the Boston Celtics. Should be a good crowd, good energy in the arena, lots of eyes on that game for Memphis. So it should be a fun one, to say the least. Thanks for making Locked On Grizzlies your first listen today. For your second listen today, be sure to check out Locked On Sports Today. From the games that matter the most to the biggest stories in sports, go beyond the scoreboard and behind the scenes with local experts and insights only Locked On can provide. Locked On Sports Today, available on this app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. On the next episode of Locked On Grizzlies, DeMichael Cole will be back. He'll be breaking down the Celtics game, what went right, what went wrong, all and all and on and on. And then after DeMichael has his solo show, we'll finish out the rest of the week, the next three episodes, him and I, the dynamic duo, back together. I miss my buddy DeMichael. Excited to be talking Grizzlies with him again. But you'll get to hear from him next time you make Locked On Grizzlies your first listen, which will be tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Locked On Grizzlies. Continue to rate, review, subscribe, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. Making us a part of your Memphis Grizzlies experience is always appreciated, not just by my co-host, DeMichael Cole, but by yours truly, Joe Mullinax. For DeMichael, I'm Joe. Until next time, stay locked in, Grizzlies fans. This is Locked On Grizzlies.